Abide with me. Fast falls the eventide. The darkness deepens, Lord, with me abide. When other helpers fail and comforts flee, help of the helpless, O abide with me. I need thy presence every passing hour. What but thy grace can foil the tempter's power? Who like thyself my guide and stay can be? Through cloud and sunshine, Lord, abide with me. I fear no foe with thee at hand to bless. Ills have no weight and tears no bitterness. Where is the sting? Where grave thy victory? I triumph still if thou abide with me. Hold thou thy cross before my closing eyes. Shine through the gloom and point me to the skies. Heaven's morning breaks and earth's vain shadows flee. In life, in death, O Lord, abide with me. I open with Abide With Me in honor of my neighbor, David Williams, who died earlier this week. May he rest in peace. I am Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio, and this is a great network. They deserve your support. Head on over there to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. Show them some love. The first guest of the evening is Anthony Rayson. I have had a little trouble getting in touch with Anthony today, but I'm going to try one more time. I'm really hoping that we will get him because he's always a great guest. So here we go. I'm just about to try that out and see how that goes. Anthony is the publisher of many zines featuring writings from prisoners.
Good evening.
Well, hello, Anthony. I'm glad to have you on the show. You are live on the New American Dream Radio Show.
Fantastic. Well, we've been involved in a very intense, labor-intensive move. My wife and I, the last month or so. And so I'm moving the whole shebang over to these new digs. Anyway, I was thinking what I would talk about, and then I thought, you know, I consider myself a prison abolitionist, and people wonder, what do you mean? What are you talking about? What is this all about? And I came across this essay that I want to read from called Improvising on Reality, The Roots of Prison Abolition by Liz Samuels. Improvising on reality is the key principle underlying the building of a united left and raising the consciousness of the people. It will give us our tactics. This is from George Jackson from his book Blood in My Eye, 1972. Okay, the five-day seizure of Attica Correctional Facility in 1971 by prisoners held there was pivotal for the development of what can be called prison abolitionist praxis. This political approach, at once an analysis and a strategy, held that prison reform was not just insufficient, but also counterproductive. It sought instead to remove entirely the system of imprisonment and policing through a revolutionary transformation that would render such institutions unnecessary. As the rebels at Attica made clear, abolition involved both direct confrontation with the prison system and building alternative practices to replace confinement and solve the social problems that the criminal justice system could not. The Attica Rebellion, as it was known, also marked the beginning of the end of the revolutionary prisoners movement, at least as an item of national attention. Over the previous decade, prisoners had become politicized alongside and as a part of radical movements of the time. By 1970, many prisoners across the country publicly identified themselves as revolutionaries, organizing and fighting for prisoners' rights, often leading to confrontations with prison officials. Prisoners took control of Attica on September 9, 1971, after a year of rising tension with the prison administration led by newly forged alliances among Black Panther, Young Lord, Black Muslim, and white radical prisoners. Members of these groups and unaffiliated prisoners organized water and blankets for people in the yard, as well as a negotiation team composed of two representatives from each cell block. The Attica Brothers, as they came to be called, wanted improved conditions and rehabilitation programs, political and religious freedom, freedom from physical harm, and in their initial demands, speedy and safe transportation out of confinement to a non-imperialistic country. Negotiations began after the group, Che Guevara, Franz Fanon, and Mao Zedong. This can't be the right page. Okay. Beyond reform, groups organizing inside and outside of prisons push for social programs, improved prison conditions, and a change in policies such as indeterminate sentencing. Some liberal prison administrators try to implement reforms as part of the prevailing rehabilitation correctional wisdom of the time, such as increased access to educational and tactical training and the formation of inmate grievance councils. By design, these reforms were minor alterations to the existing system and were often used to dampen the fire of more radical critiques. In Massachusetts, for example, reform legislation that sought to reduce the size of the prison system by linking state prisons in a stepwise behavior modification program that expanded work in community facilities resulted in significant prison expansion. Former Department of Youth Services Director Jerome Miller himself recognized these community corrections facilities as not so much alternative as additional. Even the granting of prison movement demands bolstered the prison system, as witnessed in the campaign against indeterminate sentencing. The reformers, who had conceived of indeterminate sentencing in 1870, had viewed it as a provocative, progressive way to rehabilitate prisoners. In practice, it was used to keep individuals imprisoned at the discretion of parole boards. The 1970s prisoners' movement successfully overturned indeterminate sentences. By the 1980s, however, individuals on the political right had viewed this policy as too lenient and used its discontinuation as an opportunity to enact more repressive sentencing policies such as mandatory minimums in the 1980s and three-strike laws in the 90s. Combination of the disappointing reality of reform and the rapid radicalization of people inside, facilitated by the steady influx of radicals entering prison on politically motivated charges, led reformers and revolutionaries to start coupling demands for institutional changes with calls to overhaul or eliminate the entire system. A radical analysis of imprisonment spread, identifying prisons as warehouses of the poor, are weapons of genocide meant to oppress individuals and communities rather than promote safety. In this analysis, rather than being broken and in need of repair, U.S. prisons functioned as they were designed to be tools for maintaining racial and class hierarchies. The United Prisoners Union wrote, "It is a gross political mistake to struggle for minimum reforms, because even when these reforms are granted, the concentration camps are still there for those who threaten the ruling class." Jerome Miller agreed, characterizing reform as innovation without threatening the institution's stability, and new language to cover all realities. The only solution, then, was to abolish prisons and develop new structures that dealt holistically with the root causes of societal harms. In a letter to one of his supporters, John Clutchett, one of the Soledad brothers, wrote, "There is but one imperative, overhaul. Reform means changing the frame on the wall, but not the picture itself." It was in this context of a developing radical prisoner class consciousness and regional local prison organizing that the prisoners at Attica occupied D Yard. The violence by New York State troopers in response to the takeover and subsequent self-organizing of the facility by the prisoners at Attica proved to many the necessity of radical change. Calls for abolishing prisons were widespread. They intermingled with other approaches to prison organizing, including individual prisoner defense committees, prison moratorium organizing, legislative efforts, and insurrectionary appeals. Leftist media such as KPFA, Pacifica radio show, "Nothing is More Precious Than," covered news of prisoner organizing, promoted campaigns to free political prisoners, and circulated communiques of underground groups such as the Black Liberation Army that challenged the prison system. But even many in the prison movement did not view abolition as viable. It was not until after Attica that organizations explicitly focused on abolition. Although initially dispersed, a common set of abolitionist ideas, strategies, and tactics coalesced during the early to mid-70s. Abolition was based on the shared belief that social inequalities caused interpersonal violence. In the Abolitionist Handbook, Instead of Prisons, in 1976, the Prison Research Education Action Project, collective abolitionist pacifists, defined crime as a problem with roots deep in the social structure, not just as a series of problems of individuals. Rather than punishing individual actors, collective response to the root causes is needed. These root causes, including racism, poverty, sexism, and homophobia, were produced by society and the state and resulted in an unequal situation. So they decided and created programs that could effectively abolish prisons by directly addressing the sources of social inequalities and interpersonal systemic violence. From the perspective of Angela Davis, herself a political prisoner in 1971, the Attica Rebellion marked a moment within the history of this country when people started to take seriously the possibility of abolishing the prison. Not masses of people, however, as the subsequent rise of mass imprisonment will attest. But to some, Attica and its aftermath raised a specter that the best prison was no prison at all. Abolition was predicated on the idea that imprisonment was a means to control, maintain impoverishment among, and exert systemic violence upon communities of color and poor whites. The demand to abolish prisons, more recently to abolish the prison industrial complex, emerged as a challenge to white supremacy, economic inequality, and systemic violence. Activist Bettina Epthecker, a supporter of the Soledad Brothers and active in the campaign to free Angela Davis, wrote, "The issue is not only reform, but also to mount a struggle to abolish the present functions and foundations of the prison system, an effort which can finally succeed only with the abolition of capitalism. Of course, what reforms can be won in day-to-day battle on the legal and political front will be important concessions, but the point is to attack the whole foundation, all the assumptions involved in maintaining the prison system." A variety of organizations, individuals, and means were employed to further the cause of abolition. This included prisoner unions, prisoner support organizations, revolutionary organizations, pacifists, and even a few judges and prison administrators. The broad politics of abolition provided one of the very few places where Black nationalists, proponents of armed self-defense, and primarily white radical pacifists came together and shared politics and practice. Self-identified abolitionists consider themselves a part of a living tradition of movements for social justice directly connected to movements to abolish slavery in the 19th century. They saw the present-day terms of imprisonment as a different form of slavery. It was paradoxically enabled by the 13th Amendment, which outlawed slavery except as a punishment for a crime, thereby writing penal slavery into law while seemingly to formally abolish it. Well, yep, this is the struggle that I'm very intensely involved with, and I notice more and more people are taking that battle cry up, and it's really heartening to see. And then the connections made between prisoners and outside activists and family members is growing. And concomitantly, the repressive response, which is basically their only argument, is increasing as well. So I kind of realized it was going to play out this way, because that's how things work. Things are getting more intense and more scary, and more polarized. The problem is, in my opinion, the opposition, the so-called people's force, is so lacking in education and organization. So. And, the forces of fascism, that they just organize their soldiers. It doesn't matter what they say or think. They just program them. We have to know what we're doing in order to function. We need to learn. And it's a difficult process. It's frustrating, and it's constantly being hampered and hassled with. But you just got to keep trying.
Anthony, another thing that I think is a big problem for those of us who are trying to create some change here is that we can't seem to agree on a goal and work towards it. We split into factions and we fight each other instead of fighting the system, as it were, so we don't get anywhere because we're too busy worrying about little details where we may not agree with each other.
Little cat fights. Yeah, it is ridiculous. Well, people need to focus on basic goals. A society that is not at war with the world. Society is not a police state in a prison camp, I mean, this is how we got to look at the reality of it and deal with it at that level, because this is some scary stuff they're throwing at us. We just can't, ignore it. So the more we know, the better off we're going to be and be able to handle whatever comes our way. So that's what we're trying to do. Work with conscious prisoners to help, educate all kinds of people, inside out and wherever. So, and I'm getting more collaborators with more internet savvy and more youth so they can run and go to all these meetings, I used to go to. But so, it's nice to have some operatives going around.
And good. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
So we have about 3 minutes left here. Tell me what's going on with your move. Are you moving to a new house?
Yeah, we moved to a new house. It's like 10 miles south of our old house, but I had this enormous zine distro. I got like 40 floor to ceiling bookcases.
Yes, I was privileged to see it in person last year.
so I had to schlep all that stuff over here, basically by myself. Wow. I tried to get my son to help me, but they kind of pooped out on me. So So, you know, I'm sure my neighbors are wondering, what the hell is going on over there, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's fine. But it's great because I got this, like, four-car garage.
Oh.
I got my old school music center. I got, over 1,000 cassettes, all these scratched-up old albums, and a bunch of CDs. That's all I got.
Right.
But it covers, like, a whole wall.
Wow.
I can listen to anything I want now.
Yeah.
And I got all my, I'm starting to get all my books and I'm starting to figure out where all I put all these zines. It was just, you know, I throw them all in boxes and then where the hell are these? I try to go through, I'm kind of back ordered and like a month and a half behind. People are complaining, you know. They said, well, come on, relax. I'll get there. So this morning I woke up at 4:21. And
whoa.
I started immediately, just put the coffee on and went straight to, you know, filling orders for
uh-huh.
like 4 hours. Then I started doing regular stuff like painting the house and doing this, you know.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, you sound busy, that's for sure. You know, Andrew, yeah. I really appreciate having you on the show every month. And I really look forward to next month because we've run out of time for this month.
All right. Well, great talking with you. Take care, folks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions through the elements and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back, everyone. This second segment of our show always starts with Philip Ferruccio's column, It's the Empire, Stupid.
Good evening, working stiffs, saints, sinners, and hypocrites. In today's climate of increasingly neo-Nazi thought and behavior in Europe and here at home, a must-see film is director Mark Rotenman's Sophie Scholl, The Final Days. This came out in 2005. Sophie Scholl was a member of the White Rose Group, an anti-Nazi resistance group within Germany during the Third Reich. To see her and her brother, students who cared more about the Nazi plague than just getting good grades, to see them having their heads cut off, unleashed a monsoon of tears onto my face. I don't think I had ever even cried that intensely after my mother and my dad had passed on. The immense bravery of those Germans in the White Rose is something that every middle and high school civics class should cover, along with the story of Chelsea Manning. During the height of the occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan, Chelsea Manning, as PFC First Class Bradley Manning, leaked documents revealing horrific and underhanded actions by our government. Manning sent over to WikiLeaks the now famous Apache helicopter massacre of 20 unarmed civilians in Baghdad in 2007. In the audio of the event, one can hear the crew acting as if some surreal video game that kids were playing. This was only the tip of the iceberg to what the Bush-Cheney cabal was orchestrating in one of the most horrific, illegal, and immoral actions by our country. The damage continues today with the advent of what is labeled ISIS, a fanatical Islamic group that would never have taken root but for our preemptive attack and occupation of Iraq. Miss Manning, who then had to spend years in jail and suffer continued harassment to this day, is to this writer a saint. Why? Because like Sophie Scholl, she cared. We need not go into the depths of Dante's Inferno to find sinners like our own presidents. From Eisenhower signing off on assassinations during the Cold War, to Nixon and later on to Reagan and then Bush Sr. doing the same, with Clinton following suit with his NATO war on Serbia, and then, of course, the three presidents who followed them, it never ceases. The objective study of world history will one day reveal how Bush Jr., Obama, and now Trump all carry the water to the infamous military-industrial empire, parent of this deep state. The Bush-Cheney cabal kicked over the hornet's nest in the Middle East, and then Nobel Prize winner Obama increased drone missile murders by 10 times. And finally, Trump continued the feeding frenzy by giving our nation's teat to the military-industrial empire to suck on. And the hits just keep on coming. What is really a sin is, if not what all those presidents have done, or should I say authorized, but now many of us should finally know who they really work for. All the presidential libraries and all the foundations they stick their names on mean jack shit at the end of the day. Ike could have stood on his head and spit out wooden nickels in January 61 and would not alter what he allowed those two Dulles brothers to do in his name for 8 years. Of course, of all of those sinners, he at least finally showed some true remorse in his farewell speech of January 61. The rest of them, nothing. Big money and big power have always influenced our political system and our leaders. The sin of it all is the overwhelming number of my fellow citizens who, unlike Sophie Scholl and Chelsea Manning, do not care. Finally, to be a hypocrite is right up there with being a sinner. Webster's Dictionary has it as the false assumption of an appearance of virtue or religion. I guess the dictionary's creators had in mind politicians and religious leaders. How right on can one get? Imagine all those mostly Republican politicos who can rail and rant about family values and then sanction the murder of families through phony wars. The minions who follow these Pied Pipers are keen to hang the flag on their garages and their lapels, not caring in whose name the flag destroys overseas. How about those evangelical hypocrites who call abortion doctors murderers and women who have one as going to hell for killing babies, and then they don't give a rat's ass about the missiles and bombs that our military uses to kill pregnant mothers and little babies under the banner of collateral damage? As if Jesus is right there pressing the bomb button. How about the myriad of elected officials who have the best health care that we taxpayers subsidize, standing there shoveling out the BS as to why we all cannot have what they have? Like with smirking chimp Bill Clinton, they feel our pain, regardless of which of these two corrupt parties they belong to. Yes, there are a few on the Democratic side, like those who they call the squad, who see through this crap and want things to change for the better. But alas, the empire will not allow it, unless enough of us stand out there to be even a bit like Miss Scholl and Miss Manning. Thank you.
Well, that was quite a column, and now we have Philip Peruggio here with us live. Why don't you tell us what you were trying to say there?
Well, I was saying a lot of things. Basically, we have people amongst us that like Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden and Julian Assange, that they're all looked upon as being criminals by the people in power, when in reality they have released the truth about what this empire has been doing covertly under the noses of the American public. So there's a whole disconnect. And the sad thing is that so many of my fellow citizens, neighbors, friends, and associates and acquaintances and people I rub elbows with going in a supermarket shopping, how many of these people still believe the hogwash and they're drinking the Kool-Aid that the two political parties who represent the empire are giving them? There's no understanding or no wanting to be to understand about what's really happening that's affecting their lives. But the way it is, Chuck, is if it's not directly hurting your wife and kids and your home, then it's not my problem. That's how people see it, you know? Mm-hmm. And very, very sad. I think it's very sad because I think what the Trump phenomena has shown is how a smooth-talking medicine man who's not selling any medicine, but can convince so many people who don't have a pot to piss in that he's going to save them from the very people that he is behind and who are supporting him. So, and then you have the Democrats who, as I said in my piece, who, with some exceptions, are the hypocrites, because a lot of them know better. A lot of them really do know better. But, they have the best health coverage that our money can buy, and they don't seem to really care that the rest of us don't have it. Isn't that ironic, Chuck, that the people who say they care about us, I'm talking about the Democrats now, because the Republicans, to them, it's a free market, I mean, they don't want to talk about what they have from the taxpayers. But the Democrats, that's the real disappointment, because you watch these debates with these presidential hopefuls, and Sanders, and to some extent Warren, are making an effort you know, on things like real Medicare for All and other important things. But then they turn around and they act so foolish. I mean, Elizabeth Warren, who looks like she might be the front runner soon, she has this plan to tax the super rich. So she says, well, if you're making over $50 billion a year, $50 million a year, I'll tax you 2%. You know,
tax you what?
But that's gonna do a lot. That's gonna do a lot. I mean,
yeah.
That's gonna really. Oh boy, that's gonna help. Oh my God! I know she says that if you're a billionaire, she's gonna tax you 3%. No, she actually said that. I mean, this is not a Mad Magazine cartoon article.
And,
she
and
actually
you know,
said that. Yeah.
And you know what? I mean, when we were growing up, this country was in pretty good shape. People were, a lot of people were making a lot of money. New things were being built all the time. And the tax rates were a whole lot higher.
Well, 1961, when Kennedy took office, the top federal tax bracket was 90%. If you made $400,000 a year, you were taxed at 90%. Now, you know, and I know that people had accountants, and they deducted for different things. So maybe the guy paid, 50%.
Right.
And he kept half the money for himself. Like I said once before, I don't know if I said it on your show, but I had an uncle in 1962. My father was a longshoreman. He was making, I believe, $8,000 or $9,000 a year, as a longshoreman with some benefits.
Right.
And my Uncle Dan was a sales rep. He worked for himself. And he was probably making, I don't know what he was making, but I would imagine he was probably making $30,000, maybe $40,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
The guy had a Cadillac for himself, a Cadillac for his wife. He belonged to a country club, had a nice house on Long Island. He was doing pretty good, at a top bracket. You know, his bracket might have been 60 or 70%, and maybe more, probably higher. And yet he still was living better than my father and my mother were. So, I mean, you're right. I mean, now the tax bracket is 37%. That's the top bracket. That means Romney admitted that he was paying 15%. And he's a mega, mega, mega millionaire.
Yeah.
So, it's a sin how the working people, I mean, the working stiffs, buy into all this crap that the Republicans are selling, and they don't understand that for that $500 or $800 a year break that each of us got in the, quote, middle class, the people making mega millions were getting a fantastic tax break of millions of dollars, probably.
Yeah.
In some instances, yeah. So, but anyway, the piece wasn't just about the taxes.
Well, no, I thought it was very fascinating the way that you drew the parallel with Sophie Scholl.
Yeah.
And why don't you address that a little bit?
Well, Sophie Scholl lived in Germany. She was a student with her brother and some friends, and they formed the White Rose Underground Society during the Nazi era in Germany.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and they would do leaflets, and they would hand them out anonymously at the school and other places, telling how terrible Hitler and the whole regime was. I mean, eventually they got caught, and her and her brother had their heads cut off. They were guillotined, and it's a sad story. And look how brave a person her and her brother were, people they were. Imagine how brave that must be to be inside of the beast and to stand up to it. That takes a lot of courage.
Sure does. Yeah.
I mean, I used to stand on a street corner for an hour a week holding a controversial sign against the empire and the invasion and occupation of Iraq. And, to me, you know, I had a lot of pushback on that. A lot of people got angry at me. I didn't care, but a lot of people yelled at me, and the cops were used to come and try to harass us.
Yeah.
And that was nothing compared to what Sophie Scholl did. How about Chelsea Manning? I mean, you know,
yeah,
sacrificed as Bradley Manning. He at the time, he sacrificed everything to release that information about what the government was doing behind our backs. And look what they did to this poor person. I mean, she was in jail for, I think, 7 years, and now she's out, and they have her under all kinds of house arrest, and the grand jury, they're trying to get her to drop a dime on Julian Assange, you know, to try to say things to try to get him in trouble, and he's in England in prison where he shouldn't be. And yet, you know, the people we pass by in the supermarket and they couldn't care about any of this.
Or,
and neither do the Democrats, and neither does anybody else.
Yeah, if they do care, they think, oh well, why did they let her out at all? And you know, they are way very much on the other side, having fallen for everything.
Well, you know, the real sadness, Chuck, is I always go back to the militarism, because that's the key to me.
Exactly.
And you know, half of our tax money goes to militarizing. It's outrageous. It's obscene. During the Iraq situation, they were sending National Guard soldiers who had no training at all over to Iraq and Afghanistan because they needed more bodies and more boots on the ground. And, you know, the whole thing was just orchestrated attempt to just take over the Middle East, basically.
Exactly. Right.
And it was sad. It was so sad that all that money, our tax money, that we went down the toilet, and the American soldiers that were killed, and look at all the Iraqi civilians that were murdered. And,
exactly.
Oh, the whole thing, and then you have a guy like Obama, when he becomes president, and they want to have hearings on the invasion of Iraq. They want to hold the people like Bush and Cheney accountable. Obama says, we have to move past that, he says. He said, we can't look back. Well, I mean, was this guy an idiot? Can't look back, because he was told to say that.
Right.
You know, I mean, look, it will never change until more and more of the working stiffs in this country open their eyes and start to speak out. That's all. Because the one thing that the people in power cannot handle is when an excessive amount of citizens go out in the public, in the streets or in the public thoroughfares for one issue in a mass. These people cannot handle that. And it reminds me of the scene from a 1960s B movie about corruption on the waterfront. And in this movie, the union guy was corrupt, and he was doing what the rich guy who runs everything behind the scenes wanted, and they were screwing the workers, and the workers finally had enough, and they had a big massive demonstrations, and they were after some of them got beat up, and some of them got killed even, and they had this massive with the families and everybody, and the media was there, and they were all over the whole waterfront, protesting in mass numbers. And in the movie, there's a scene, there's a guy sitting in a penthouse in his living room. He's looking at this on the news, and he tells his butler, he says, get me O'Brien on the phone. So the guy gets to the phone, and they get O'Brien. That's the union guy. You know, he's supposed to be running everything. He gets him on the phone, and he says, I can't have this. I can't have this. You see what's on the news here? I can't have this. He said, do something. Straighten it out. Settle it. But get them the hell back to work. And the union settled with the workers, and they got a better deal. So that's just an example.
Yeah. Well, it's it's a frightening situation, and it's hard to see how it's going to get better soon.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. I think the important thing is to reach out to the younger people in this country, because people our age, it's probably too late, you know, or it doesn't matter. You got to get the young people. You got to get the kids in high school, the kids in college, the kids who are working for a living, you know, and they're 18 to 30. Those are the ones we have to reach and explain to them.
I think maybe the ones in grade school and junior high might be even more important.
Yeah, yeah, just that a lot of these kids, it's a little bit more difficult to reach a kid in the fourth or fifth grade. Yeah, yeah.
But if you look back at how, you know, a nation went the other way, in Nazi Germany, the Hitler Youth were a very strong part of that. They started, they were practically out of diapers.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, and it's true. The whole movement, they were really shrewd. I mean, the Nazis were very shrewd. You know, they knew what they had to do to mobilize people. And that's why it's so frightening when that Charlottesville event happened in the 17th. August, and when they were marching, we talked about it on your show before.
Yeah,
singing "Blood and Soil," which is right out of Germany during the Nazi era, and Jews will not replace us. Imagine they were actually saying that, marching, saying Jews will. I mean, think about what I'm saying. That was only done in the 50s and 60s by George Lincoln Rockwell and that fringe group of American Nazis. You know. Huh. A small amount of really strange people wearing all kinds of uniforms.
Right.
Now, these are college-age kids, and a lot of them were students of University of Virginia, and they were young men and women in there, 18, 20, 21, 22, actually saying these things. It's really scary. That's why I said in one of my pieces that as much as I have a disdain for the Democrats, and I really do, you know, I'm a Green Party member, but that doesn't mean anything. I just have no respect for the Democratic Party. Of course, I can't stand the Republican Party, but I would vote for the Democrats now, this one election, to stop this white supremacist craziness.
Well, I just, I hope it can be stopped. It's a very frightening, few years coming up.
It's frightening. It's frightening because there's a lot of people don't realize that they're really racist. They don't even know it. They don't even know it. They don't even understand it. I mean, anyway, I don't want to go into that. But there's there's a lot of people that you and I know who are deep down inside they are white supremacists.
Yeah,
they think that people of color are inferior and are bad people. You know.
Right.
Well, I guess time will tell, right? We'll have to just keep on keeping on, as they say, right?
Exactly. That's what we've got to do. We just, have to keep on hammering away and, trying to build community and unity in our little, groups locally and get the word out on shows like this one.
And also,
and hopefully somebody's going to listen.
People listening right now should definitely get the book, The People's History of the United States, written by Peter Kuznick and Oliver Stone.
Oh.
They wrote the book together. Yeah, they wrote the book together about eight, 9 years ago now. But you got to read this book. It starts out at the New Deal, and it goes from the New Deal right into Obama when he became, because it came out in 2009. But you get that book, and it's a great read. It'll give you a real understanding of what really was going on in the United States and in the world, and not what the history teachers taught us when we were back in, back in high school.
Yeah.
So that's important, too.
Okay. Well, Phil, thank you very much for being with me here. It's great having you run this second segment every week. And I think our conversations, triggered by your columns, are working really well. And I hope our listeners agree.
Thank you so much, Chuck.
All right. Thank you. And for all you listeners out there, talk to you after the station break.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exo Politics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steyer will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. it was doing not good things, and I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the evening will be Larry Pinkney. Larry is an original Black Panther, and he joins us each month. And I'm going to call him right now to add him to the show. Larry's a fascinating guy, and we're very lucky to have him on the show. So it should be dialing right now.
Good evening, Larry Pinkney speaking.
Well, hello, Larry. It's Chuck Gregory, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Thank you so much, my brother. This evening, I would like to address something that might shake us up a little bit, and then again, I hope it will give us some courage or encouragement to go on. I want to talk a bit about our nation, that is the United States of America, and where we might or might not be headed or heading. You know, with all due respect, I have had the opportunity to have lived in various countries in Europe and in Africa. And quite frankly, the United States, with all of its faults, and it has many, as does any country. But with all of its faults, this country is still, and I repeat, is still a great country. People are attacking it. We in our own country are attacking it. When in fact, I would strongly submit to you and to suggest to you that this nation fundamentally is a very good nation relative to countries around the world. Does that mean by any means that we are perfect? By no means are we perfect. Does it mean that we cannot improve? By no means does it mean we cannot improve. We should always be striving to be better, to be greater, to be better, to be a better nation, a better people. But you know what? It's really time for us to stop beating ourselves up. It really is time for us to take stock of where we have been and where we are going. And at my age, let's just say I'm well into my 60s, that puts it mildly, I certainly can say with clarity and honesty that the nation, for the most part, is far, far better than when I was born and what I have seen. I sometimes find it very interesting that young folks, especially in their teens and 20s and even in their 30s, tend to be very ahistorical. Ahistorical, i.e. no concept of history, of the continuum of history. And when I say history, I am referring to all of our histories, be we black, white, brown, red, or yellow in this nation. It is a continuum. And old man that I am, I think that it is important to put things in their historical context. So I go back to saying that it is time for us to stop beating ourselves up. It is time for us to take stock as a people, as a nation, as to where we're going. What do we really want? I have to say this, and I hope this will not be interpreted any way other than what I mean it as, and that is when people come to this country from other countries, I must say, they must show respect for the country that they are in. You know, I lived, as I said, in a number of countries in Europe and Africa, and the very fact that they allowed me to live there, to be there, to even visit there, meant that I needed to show the people in that country respect, give them their dues. Well, I expect the same thing of people coming to this nation, the same thing. Show the nation respect. Does it mean that we're perfect? No. But give us respect. And if you want to come and live in the United States, then be prepared to struggle for what I call equal assimilation. And by equal assimilation, all I mean is try and understand the values of this nation. And fundamentally, and again, I repeat, fundamentally, when we think about the founding of this country, I know I can just hear people saying, well, there was slavery. Yes. And this wasn't the only country that there was slavery and serfdom, by the way, which included white folks who were serfs, and they may as well have been, in many senses, slaves. And then someone else will say, well, there was the genocide of the indigenous native peoples. And I would respond, yes, but this was not the only nation that was engaged in the genocide of the indigenous people. For example, what happened in what became known as Mexico after the conquistadores left, Mexico engaged in genocide also against indigenous peoples, as have so many other countries. Now, is this a rationale? Am I saying so it makes it okay? Of course not. By no means does it make it okay, but let's put things in their proper context as we struggle to make our country a better place for everyone. And people need to knock the chips off their shoulders if they want to come here and struggle here with the people. Maybe they should all be compelled to read Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States. Maybe they should read the book from front to back to understand, to get a better understanding of what this nation and its struggles and its many peoples was really all about. So having said all of that, I hope I haven't bored you all to tears. I just want to again say it is time for us to stop beating each other up. We must learn and relearn to communicate with each other, to dialogue, to discuss, even to debate, but to be able to do it as intelligent, civil human beings. This, I believe, we can all do, or certainly the majority of us can do. This, to me, in my own humble way, is what this component, if you will, is of our struggle. Our struggle, be we black, white, brown, red, yellow, male or female, we are all in this together, and it's high time we realize it and struggle together. Having said that, I'm going to leave it right there and end as I like to begin by saying, as we used to say back in the day in the original Black Panther Party, all power to the people, everyday ordinary black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. That to me is the vision of our nation, and I am proud to be an American. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Larry. That was really inspiring. And I agree so much that the ability to have discourse, to agree to disagree in some cases, to talk about the things that really are important to us, and whether we can find, whether we actually find a total agreement, we probably won't, but we can find common ground and
right.
build a unity, and that's so important.
It is. It is. And I'm so glad you put it that way, because we're not seeking robots. It's not about robots. It's about honesty with each other. And I'm just, the way you said it, Chuck, sums it all up. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, thank you, Larry. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and I look forward to talking to you again next month.
Thank you, and please take care. And thanks, my thanks, my heartfelt gratitude to a wonderful audience. Take care, my brother.
All right. Well, that was great. Our next guest of the evening, I spoke earlier with Frank Cordero of the Des Moines Catholic Worker, and we're going to hear that conversation right now. Well, hi, Frank.
Climb back the old steps here. I have in my head what I wanted to talk to you about, so I'm going to get back to my room.
Okay.
Two hot topics, and we're going to shut up a couple things here.
Okay.
And the first hot topic is my trip to Memphis.
Okay.
I got to talk. I got to talk. I went 10 hours, drove 10 hours to Memphis, spent the night at Pizza and Kathleen. It's a tough name to pronounce. I'm beginning to, let me get my act together here.
Okay.
As I'm running upstairs. Oh, the other thing I got to talk about, I want to talk about the Memphis thing, but there's now a surprise move on us. We got a notice from the city zoning people. Telling us that we're in violation of shelter codes, and that we have 10 days to remedy them, or they're going to shut us down. We got a similar notice from these folks 10 years ago.
Really?
When we tried to expand our kitchen and make it more serviceable.
Right.
And as soon as we went down and tried to pull some, permits, had already begged architects and had the drawings and everything. That just set off this lady who's a new person down there, and they came after us thinking they'd be able to shut us down. And we put up a vigorous legal defense, and the attorneys we got managed to get a what we'll call a stalemate. We were grandfathered in for the work we're doing, but we can't expand in any way. So now they come again 10 years later with this complaint. And the complaint says, let me give it to you. Upon inspection of that property located at 1310 7th Street, the first thing we looked at, it says, upon inspection, nobody in our house let anybody in our in from the city to inspect this place. So there was no inspection. And then they're telling us
on the outside.
Whatever. Then they said specific violations. Upon inspection, there was found to be a single family dwelling being used as a homeless shelter, which is not a primary accessory permit. And I'm going like, well, hold on. We don't use it for a homeless shelter. It's a drop-in center.
Right.
And there are only four of us who live in this house. So I sent that to our attorney. And, at this moment, both our attorney has gotten a hold of the zoning people, and they're having a big powwow next week to clear up this indiscretion. And what we're really going to find out is who really wants us closed.
Yeah.
And our bet is the neighborhood association would have something to do with this. It's all having to do with gentrification. And but we've been up here 43 years, longer than anybody. And we're not going to go down easy, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So that is the newest wrinkle in our life here. And I'm just trying to gather wits to and attorneys, and we're really lucky. We got a hold of the guy who worked with us 10 years ago, and he's going to pick up the cause. We know I know at least three or four city council people, because finally they be the ones who will finally decide it, and I know these people personally, so that's a good thing. I'm feeling relatively good, but then there's the thing I wanted to the newest thing though that just has got me I was working on when you called and has caught me off is that Annie Patton, who lives at our house, you may remember Annie, African American woman, very heavy set, with a walker, and she often serves food. She's been with us as a guest for now like 3 or 4 years. She's been in the neighborhood as long as we've been in the neighborhood. Annie was arrested a couple days ago for trespass, loitering across the street where Bergen House is, in that in that big parking lot. Yeah. Yeah, that the police and the city neighborhood people are now trying to clear out the folks who hang out at night and on that corner, doing illegal behavior having to do with drugs and prostitution.
Right.
However, not always, and not everybody. So it's a mixed bag, and we've been living with this for years. I mean, it's been a real cultural phenomenon. In this neighborhood, and you can tell the whole scene about the regentrification and the city. They just want to move poor people out of here. It's what's going on. She got arrested, and she went down to jail, and it was just dumb. You don't look. First of all, why arrest an elderly, handicapped, in a walker, mentally challenged person? Why? I mean, that makes no sense at all. You bring the person to their home, you know?
She's easier to catch.
What's that?
She's easier to catch.
Yes, you're right. Well, ironically, that's true. It was just the slow and the mental guys who got caught, three or four of them. Annie and one of them. So, I'm trying to get an attorney to take the case. I think we put this in front of a judge and just say, let's just have some common sense here. And then if you put her on the stage, on the stand, it'll be a great entertainment. But then judge has got to know, why did you arrest this lady? Really?
Yeah.
Come on.
Really?
So that's the other thing we're doing. The thing I wanted to talk to, and I don't know where I can. I lost the folder, so I'll talk off the head on the top of my head. There's the have you ever heard of the Cumberland Presbyterian Church?
No.
It's one of those breakaway Presbyterian churches in the U.S. history, Southern, mostly Southern, and it's predominantly Black and poor. And it was good on women and stuff like that. They have a seminary in Memphis where I was asked by a friend, a mutual friend in the Catholic Worker, Peter, and I pronounce his name, but I don't have it in front of me, so I dare not say it. He's sort of like, like a cousin in the Catholic Worker. He's close to the folks from Atlanta, Georgia, and the folks in Sheriff Brook in Kansas City. It's the Presbyterian thing. And this here this Presbyterian crowd is predominantly poor and black in Memphis, Tennessee. And I learned that Protestant ministers, half of them do not have full-time jobs as ministers. They have to have full-time jobs to support themselves so they can do ministry. So I never knew that. I'm going like, wow, these are my kind of people. The seminary has a radical edge to it. It teaches the same kind of scripture stuff that I believe in, you know, the Chad Meyer, the historical analysis, literature. It's literature in action, not dogma being practiced. It was just a really great for me to just drive 10 hours and sleep almost the next day, and then get up and talk for an hour and a half with 30 people, and then get in my car at 4 o'clock and come back because of the, you know, the foreclosure stuff that's going on. Oh. And I'm just saying that it was like a shot in the arm for me, because I don't get to talk much. So it was, Frank's complaining, nobody listens. I got a new audience and I felt the fun. Right. Okay. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Uh-huh. I've already talked too much. I'm sorry.
No, you have not. Interesting stuff. Wow, a lot going on there. I sure hope this zoning thing and the arrest all get straightened out in a good way.
All right. All right. Thanks, Chuck. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Frank.
I'm going to have my head together by then. All right. Bye-bye.
Always good to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We're very fortunate to have Frank Cordero as a weekly guest. And, sounds like some big challenges coming up there in Des Moines. And I certainly hope that they will be able to resolve the legal battle. So we have a little bit of time here. I'm gonna try a little song that was pretty popular back when I was in high school. I'm sitting in a railway station, got a ticket to my destination. On a tour, a one-night stand, my suitcase and guitar in hand. Every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one-man band. Homeward bound, I wish I was. Homeward bound. Home where my thoughts escaping, home where my music's playing, home where my love lies waiting silently for me. Every day's an endless stream of cigarettes and magazines. Each town looks the same to me, the movies and the factories, and every stranger's face I see reminds me that I long to be homeward bound. I wish I was homeward bound. Home where my thoughts escaping, home where my music's playing, home where my love lies waiting silently for me. Tonight I'll sing my songs again, I'll play the game and pretend. But all my words come back to me in shades of mediocrity, like emptiness in harmony. I need someone to comfort me. Homeward bound, I wish I was. Homeward bound. Home where my thoughts escaping, home where my music's playing, home where my love lies waiting silently for me. Silently for me. Coming up in our final segment, we'll have M.K. Davis. And I suspect he's going to tell us quite a bit about his searches for Bigfoot. Stay tuned. Talk to you on the other side of the station break.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles, a show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Bitcoin, Litecoin, Moneycoin, Yourcoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm on to something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back, everyone, to the New American Dream Radio Show. And remember, We are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and it is listener-supported radio, so it's very important for you to head on over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio and look for that donation button and use it. Our final guest of the evening is M.K. Davis. M.K. joins us from Mississippi, and he always has some interesting stories to tell us. Usually it's about Bigfoot, sometimes other things. So I'm going to get him on the line right away here. And here we go. Oh, that must have been the wrong number. I have a couple of them here for him. So let me try again. Okay, this must be the one.
Hello.
Well, hello, MK. It's Chuck Gregory, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
On the air. Okay, great. Well, I'll tell you, it's last October, I was at Hanobi, Oklahoma, and I had a presentation there at the Bigfoot Festival there and at Hanobi. It's a festival and a conference. And I had chest pains, just unbelievable. And I came home, and I actually gave Igor Bortsev, the Russian who was there also, I gave him a ride to Jackson, got him settled in a motel at the nearby the bus station so that he could continue a bus ride on across to Carolina. And then I went home, and the next day I was in the hospital. And they told me that they were unsuccessful at putting a stent in a really bad blockage. And then the surgeon said that he did not recommend to try surgery because he thought it was in a really bad spot and that I would die on the operating table. So,
oh wow,
they decided to try lowering cholesterol, lowering all the building blocks of plaque, and try to see if it softens on its own. So since then, beginning in April of this year, I have been to Death Valley. I have been in July. I have been to Lovelock Cave in northern Nevada. I have been to Mount Lassen in Northern California. I've been to Bluff Creek in Northern California. And after that, I went and spoke at a conference there in Hastings, Nebraska, at a Bigfoot museum there. And then I've been to Indiana since then and went Bigfooting in Indiana. So I don't know whether I'm cheating death or defying death or whatever that is, but all of these great opportunities came. And while I wasn't in the best of health, I went anyway. Made sure I had all my equipment, my nitroglycerin, you know, all those good things that you rely on when you get down. And I was able to do it. I was able to hike back into the Bluff Creek area. And I hadn't been there in about 4 years. And it had completely changed. They had some kind of really high water there that had changed the course of the creek. It had just everything looked different. So I was able to get back in there. Now, I wasn't my complete self, and I admit that. I had planned on my trying to make it, you know, up the mountain to this, what I call a lair. I had, Don Monroe and I had found this lair, and Ken Ittings had found this lair back in 2008. And I had not been successful on making it there since after several attempts. So this was no different. What happened was that when we got down there, Don just inexplicably hit the ground. You know, I've got videotape of it.
What?
I heard him holler before he ever fell. He hollered before he fell. And he just seemed to just be pushed or flew through the air and just buried his face up into the brush. And, his ear, he had pieces of sticks in his ear canal, and his ear was shredded, and it was just badly bleeding. I got sick down there. A fellow that was with us, a good friend named Dennis Wern, also got sick. And then the other young gentleman, Eric Smith, the youngest of all of us, got nervous and agitated, and just we lost the will to go up that mountain. So we ended up going back up to the staging area where our vehicles were. I set up a tent, and I went in that tent, and I shook all night, which is, I don't have any explanation for it, except that it just was not meant to be. And there were tracks all down there. Bigfoot tracks were all down, you know, going up into that ravine that led up to that lair. So, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know, we don't know all there is to know about Bigfoot or whatever, and what he employs. But it seems like every one of us, all four of us, for without ever speaking a word to one another, just decided not to go.
That's pretty significant. I mean, do you think that that this was happenstance, or do you think you had a little help making up your mind in that direction?
Well, yeah, that night, when we made it back up to the staging area, this young guy, Eric Smith, he stayed up a good bit of the night. He said he heard, he felt the ground shaking. It was so heavy. Footsteps. Wow. that came between the cars. And wow, he heard a vocalization, a little short vocalization. Don said that he saw three in the distance, and every time I've ever been down there, I don't care when it has been, and I've been there probably maybe 15 to 20 times, I'd have to count. I've always found fresh signs. There was always some activity going on down there. So this attempt to get back up to that lair, and the lair was truly a lair. It had deer bones in there that had been broken open and mouth sucked out. Had a water, little waterfall, a little brook coming through it. Fresh water, a good place to lay down. It was carpeted with ferns, and it were tracks all in there. This was in 2008. And, you know, we didn't have any problem going up there then. Now, you know, our will to do it was fine. But since then, we have not just been unable, for whatever reason, to get back up there. And this time I had all these reinforcements and stuff. We found the location, where to go with that. And I could show you the video. It's kind of a gross video, but it, Don's here. It's just blood is just running out of his ear. And then if you could see that video, you know, you could say, what in the world is, you know, he goes, he hollers out, but he doesn't holler because he's fallen. He hollers before he falls.
Huh.
and then he just like flies through the air and like this, you know, when you don't catch yourself at all, it's totally unexpected. He didn't even put his hands down. I mean, he just buried his face into the brush. And so we had that. He recovered enough to continue on. We didn't have to carry him or anything. But
well, that's
the I mean, you get out there in those places like that, and you get a person that's down and can't help himself. We were like a cross between the Apple Dumpling Gang and Grumpy Old Kent. We were not the best of health, and you know, and we only had one young person with us. He was so anxious about being down there that he could hardly, function. And like I said, we don't know what's going on there because he was fine, and before we went down there, but he just fear overcame him. And so we all just kind of looked at each other and just turned around away from it and turned our backs to it and walked out without a word. It was an anticlimactic thing. Well, I got everything else that I set out to do by going down there, but that making it up to where Bigfoot actually stayed. In this lair, it's the only thing else I can call it. We were unable to do it, and so I've heard a lot of things, and I've seen a lot of strange things, and that's just one of them. I have to chalk up to strangeness, the high strangeness. something occurred that went across the board, between all of us.
That
it was an unspoken communication. Don't go up there. And so we didn't. And so, but for a fellow who has this heart condition, I have run the gamut.
Yeah, you sure have.
Go ahead.
I'm going to say you keep on doing that, and I expect to be talking to you for many more years, and I want to hear lots of trips.
I think that it is good for me, not just the physical, but the getting out and pushing the envelope a little bit. However the envelope is. Kind of just pushing it a little more. And so, you end up with, I haven't had any more chest pains. I went out to Indiana to a place called Prather Lake. It's in a forest called, Morgan Monroe State Park and Forest. And it's in southern Indiana. It's hilly. I hate to use hilly. It's really mountainous. A lot of rock in there. And this lake has this reputation for having Bigfoot activity there. And Mr. Leroy Nail and Aldo Gonzalez took me there. And Leroy runs the Indiana Bigfoot Researchers Organization.
Oh, okay.
So he's had a lot of experience out that way. And we found a small track, which I'm a little unsure of. When you find something small, you don't really know if you found Bigfoot or a human or what, Well, but they went back and casted the track anyway, in case that it was some juvenile Bigfoot. It was up in a kind of a rugged area, and it was barefooted. So, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But it was a great pleasure to add Indiana to my list of this gamut that I have run.
Yeah.
And I've got one more place to go, as far as I know. That's Hanobi, Oklahoma, again. I will end up there again.
Okay.
At the place where it all started last year with the chest pain. I look to make connections there with Igor. Igor is coming back. Igor Borzev.
Okay.
You know, if you want to know what Bigfooting has done for me, and it's done for many other people too, I would imagine, is it brings me together with people of a lot similar interests that I would have never met otherwise. From Russia, you know, I'm just a guy from Mississippi, you know, a rural area in Mississippi that this interest has taken me and elevated my game. And I feel a lot more cosmopolitan about this great country that we live in and what it has to offer in the wilderness and wilds, and the people, that have been just wonderful and fabulous, and then to meet international people, it's just, I can't say how grateful I have been this past year, having come so close to reaching an end point in my life. And then to have gotten some kind of redemption from it. And so I'm going to continue, and I'm hoping, I'm going to bet that when I go back to Hanobi, I don't have any problems because all these other places that I've been have kind of redeemed me. And I've gotten that blood sugar down and that cholesterol down, and I've done all the things that the good people there at the hospital told me to do, and I think I feel like it's worked. So you know, you never know for sure, but you know, I have a really good feeling that it's going to be a good journey from here on. So I look to be out there in some form or fashion. And we're all these wonderful places, whether it be the Wild West or the Deep South or the eastern areas of the country, Florida, maybe down there with you, Chuck.
I was just about to ask: are there any places down here, maybe out in Everglades or something?
Oh yes, indeed, they have what they call the Florida Skunk Ape, and I've been over there. Around the Myakka River and on further down into the Glades.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I stopped at a little store and there was a sign taped to the window. If you have seen a skunk ape, call this number. I don't know who it was or I didn't call the number, but somebody's down there looking for the skunk ape, you know, out ahead of me.
I hope you will come down this way sometime and get to meet you in person. That would be very cool.
Well, yes, sir. That would be a grand thing for sure.
Maybe you could even take me along on a trip out there.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever heard of the green. Have you ever heard of the Green Swamp?
No.
The Green Swamp's probably, I think it's around Tampa.
Oh, okay.
It's very famous for a lot of Bigfoot sightings.
All right.
It's also got wild cows in there, which is, if people don't know it or realize it, is amongst the most dangerous animals in the United States.
Really?
These wild cows that have been there for generations.
Yeah.
They're a lot like Cape Buffalo.
Uh-huh.
They just don't. They're nasty dispositions and have little tolerance for a person. So you can get in trouble with a cow out there in that swamp, much less a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Green swap. Well,
that would be great sometime. Hope you'll be down this way. This has been fascinating. We have another, about 4 minutes till the end of the show. So, maybe we'll kind of wrap things up here, but...
let me do a little promo for the Hanobi Bigfoot Conference.
Yes, please do.
Hanobi, Oklahoma, it's spelled H-O-N-O-B-I-A. And okay. Some people say Hanobia. But anyway, it's got a history of, they have what they call the Siege of Hanobi. Back in the 90s, where there were Bigfoot that were attacking this family almost nightly, and the guy finally got his gun and shot one of them. And the other Bigfoot came and drug it off. This made national news, and it left this little town called Hanobi. You could run through it, just jogging and not notice it.
Yeah, right.
And all of a sudden they were in the national spotlight. So after it was all said and done and the dust had settled, they began this conference, or festival, they call it. And the festival involves a lot of things besides Bigfoot. It's a 5K run, that type of thing. And there's five to 6,000 people year come to that now.
Okay.
And 400 or 500 at least, that come to the Bigfoot conference part of it. So they have embraced Bigfoot, and it's become a part of their lives and their stamp. So I've had the privilege of speaking there several years in a row, and I just wanted people to know that this is going on. It's a great place. Ron Moorhead's going to be there. Ron Moorhead of the Sierra Sounds, the very famous Ron Moorhead. Scott Nelson, Igor Bortzelf, myself. It's going to be not just a good time, but it's going to be an educational time, where you get to hear these. Ron Moorhead is, If you haven't heard Ron speak about his experiences in the High Sierras, he recorded Bigfoot activity at night outside of a little shelter, and it's become like the Patterson film of audio. It's just hard to dispute this because of the great, tremendous range in the voice. And the unusual phonetic stuff that goes on in those recordings, which Scott Nelson is a cryptolinguist who was in the Navy and was trained to decipher languages. He's been studying the Sierra Sounds, and he's going to speak on what he considers to be 100% positive proof that this is a language that they're using in these recordings. So he's an expert on languages. So that's something that you want to get. If you can get there, it's right there in the eastern part of Oklahoma, and the Kaimichis, a beautiful place, just gorgeous place. It's called Price 40 Acres. It's a kind of a retreat. They use those grounds for this conference. Just a great event. Really all privileged to go.
Well, that sounds great. Is there a website where people can look for this?
Well, just look up Hanobia Bigfoot Festival Conference. Just Google it, and it'll come up. Also have a Facebook page as well.
All right, very good. Well, it has been a pleasure talking with you and hearing about this, and I always appreciate having you on, and I look forward to talking to you again next month.
All righty, thank you so much, Chuck. Maybe I'll get down to Florida, we can scare up one of those skunk apes.
Hey, I'm game.
I don't want to try to be a wild cow.
I've faced off against the domestic ones, and they're scary enough.
Yeah, they are.
All right. Thanks again.
Next time.
Okay.
Good night,
and
everybody.
Everyone, that's wrapped up another episode of the New American Dream Radio
Welcome
Show. We thank
Radio,
you for joining us tonight. Hope you'll be back next week and every week here on Revolution Radio at freedomslip.com.
Of news and information.
Thank you,
and
good
every
night.
Day. Revolution Radio never sleeps. Revolution Radio is worldwide and borderless information. Revolution Radio is also commercial free. Revolution Radio is supported 100% by you, the listeners. And that's why we appeal to you to donate and support this station and its expenses. You can support us in many available options like archive subscriptions, our seed pack selections, or even my woodworking store. And we also even have Revolution Radio's swag at the Revolution Radio Zazzle store, which you can get t-shirts, coffee cups, even a baby onesie. Or you can just plain donate to the cause. We cannot continue without your support, and your support is what helps pay the bills. So please, if you wish us to continue, please stop by our station support page and drop a dime on us. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents, imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank or all the